Hey everyone, this is Eliza D, and welcome back for another episode of How to Save the Planet, a show where we interview people who have jobs in climate change or environment. Now, let's get started. With us today, we have Rusty West. Rusty was educated in Washington State and earned his Bachelor of Arts in Education, majoring in elementary education with a minor in environmental studies from Western Washington University. Rusty earned his Master of Education degree with major in school administration from Western Washington University. He began his interest in the environment during his teenage years in the 1960s, especially after reading Silent Spring by Rachel Carson. By the later 1970s, his partner and him moved onto a piece of land in the foothills of Skagit County. Having a lifestyle that was a low impact on nature was their goal. They built a log home, heated their home with wood, and raised four kids. During the 2000s, Rusty's activism was reignited. He then joined SEVA, Seattle Electric Vehicle Association. He met someone at one of their meetings called Michael Foster and got involved with an organization called Plant for the Planet. In 2019, they changed their name to Climate Action Families. Since 2020, Rusty and Climate Action Families have been exploring their understanding of the intersectionality of climate justice and racial justice. Normally, Rusty is the monthly outdoor program coordinator, but during the pandemic, he is serving as the coordinator for the monthly Climate Action Youth Zoom activity meeting.
Hello and welcome, Rusty, to How to Save the Planet.
Welcome to you, Eliza. So great to have an opportunity to chat with you.
Yes, likewise. So what do you do and what organization are you a part of?
I am a part of Climate Action Families. I am the secretary to the group. I also oversee the outdoor program and am the coordinator for that. That's currently on hiatus due to the COVID. And so I'm right now running the monthly Climate Action Youth Zoom activity meetings.
Nice. And I can say they are really fun. I'm part of Climate Action of Families, and I look forward to the meetings.
Oh, great. Thanks. And we welcome you aboard as one of our newer members of the group. It's yes. It's wonderful.
It's great to be there. What got you interested in climate activism?
1963 is the year that Silent Spring came out by Rachel Carson. I was 13 at the time and was amazed at the amount of damage to our environment that mankind was able to do with a simple chemical called DDT, insecticide, a pesticide that was allowed back then. And she really raised our eyes. Silent Spring spoke to the issue of how quiet it is and will become even more so if we allow these kinds of things and activities of mankind, like creating these damaging chemicals to go into our environment and doing things such as killing birds so that we can't hear them. That was the theme of the book. And that's where I first got my taste of and understanding and compassion for Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm. But did you do anything after you read the book that was fueled by your interest and newfound passion?
Sure. The Club of Rome wrote a book called The Limits to Growth. That book in the mid-60s as well helped us understand the multiplicity of potential future calamities that will be coming down our pike if we don't take a serious look at the population explosion, mm-hmm. the population bomb by Paul Ehrlich simultaneously. Back then, it was a big issue. And of course, it is still yet today, the fact that we need to look at population growth as one of the key drivers to exacerbating climate crisis, to exacerbating so many other social ills because of, in some countries, in some places around the world, unregulated and uncontrolled population explosion. Beyond that, there was other books and activities I got involved in, and much of my activism, though it was rooted back then, got funneled into one of the simultaneous, we had a lot of stuff going on in the 60s, you've probably read something about, mm-hmm. but One of the focuses of our time as teenagers was to stop the Vietnam War. And so that's where a lot of my energy got focused. And I apologize for a little noise in the background, but it will go away in just a moment.
Okay. Why do you do this climate activism work that you do? What keeps you going?
Well, two reasons. Kids and our climate. So let me explain. A few months before our our first academy, which is our training for our youth that we have in our program, I met a man named Michael Foster on November 13th, 2012 at a SEVA meeting, Seattle Electric Vehicle Association. At that point, I was driving a plug-in electric car and I joined this association, and I saw this presentation by Michael, who is a climate reality leader, as you are recently. Congratulations to your completion of the program and being a leader. And he gave this back in 2012, and I went up to him afterwards and said, "Well, this sounds really interesting." He said, "Oh, it is, but wait, there's more." I said, "What are you talking about, Michael?" And he said, "I have to tell you what I was just reading about recently, about a young boy, fourth grader." This was 2012. He was fourth grade 5 years earlier, 2007, in Germany by the name of Felix Finkbeiner. And Felix was a young person who got, in his social studies assignment, exposed to and stepped up to finding a topic to top on. And he spoke on the climate crisis. And when he learned how bad it was, he was super amazed. His parents were environmentalists in doing different government jobs and like that. But then when his father, and this is a story I'm telling you that Michael told me, his father took him to a couple different conventions, he was overwhelmed with the participation, interest, and engagement of the adults and the number of people that would show up to listen to this fourth grader. So what Michael explained to me is, as we have come to learn afterwards, that young people who can articulate their concerns about the climate and have a bit of passion about changing the course, that the trajectory that mankind is on, get listened to. They get listened to by adults because it's super interesting to find a young person who can speak eloquently at their level to the issues. And they get listened to because of the moral authority that you, Eliza, and your generation have, as you will be here so much longer after us oldsters have checked out. So that is how I got those two things put together. When Michael said, "I'm thinking of starting a chapter around here," I said, "I'm in," because it had to do with those two things I was passionate about. One was the climate, and the other is helping young people develop their potential. So that was back in 2012. And by 13, we had our first academy, our first training going, and I've been on board ever since.
That's awesome. What do you all do for the academies?
The academies are training sessions modeled after the ones that were put together by Felix and friends back in Germany. And these Plant for the Planet organization, that was our former name of our organizations. In fact, we still have a subgroup of Plant for the Planet within our Climate Action Families overall umbrella group. They are trainings that our little chapter here in Seattle, as around the world, have been using, model off the German model, to help young people learn the basics of climate education and what we can do about it. And they have a key aspect of being kid-run activities, kids training kids. So the 10, 12, 14-year-olds are training the 8, 10, 12-year-olds. And it's really a wonderful opportunity. You haven't been through an academy, Eliza, because since the COVID, we haven't had any. We've had 20 academies over these last 8 years. Yeah, 20 of these trainings. Sometimes it was four or five times a year, sometimes one a year. But when COVID is over with again, we will return to some sort of training format. We don't know if it'll be the same as we did before, but we thought that the format of young people sharing what they know and believe about and into new people would be a good model, and it's proven to be very good.
Yeah, I hope that when things are safer to be in person, that I can be part of one of those trainings. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, they're one-day trainings. We call them academies, and the result of which is that you gain the moniker of a climate justice ambassador. So we can say to ourselves, we have trained over 500 climate justice ambassadors in these last 8 years. So
congratulations, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. So we're real thankful to that. And many of these youth have either aged out of the program or have chosen to follow another path or moved away. And so we don't pull together 500 youth every month at our meetings. As you've seen, it's anywhere from 6 to 20 kids usually.
Yeah. Well, on a little bit of a different topic, what degrees do you have and where did you go to school?
Got a high school diploma in 1969 at Inglemore High School, Kenmore area north of Seattle. And that then was the beginning of my, end of my undergraduate, secondary schooling, and went on to college. And it took me about 9 years to get a four-year degree because I was doing a lot of other things along the way. But during those 9 years, I was able to finally get myself back into college. I was in college and got back into college and graduated in Bellingham at Western Washington University with a bachelor's degree in elementary education, a bachelor's degree in education with a major in elementary education and a minor in environmental studies. So of course, my interest in environmentalism sprung out of the 60s, but carried on through the 70s as I was working on this degree and went to the first, I was one of the first students to attend the Huxley College of Environmental Studies as one of the colleges up there in Western Washington University in Bellingham.
Awesome. How did you get the position that you're in now with Climate Action Families, being the secretary and the usually outdoor coordinator, but now the Zoom activity coordinator?
I think the answer to that is kind of based on a couple of things. One is when Michael said to me in 2012, I got this idea, let's do this job, this group. And then by 13, we had our first academy. About 6 months into this, Eliza, I became so enthralled with what was going on in the powerful young voices that I just, we were driving back from an event one day, and it was just Michael and I in the car. And I said, Michael, who was the founder of Plant for the Planet and the real driving force to pull us all together. Mm-hmm. I said, Michael, if anything, heaven forbid, were to happen to you, you drove off a cliff, lightning struck you, whatever, and you were out of the picture, I'm making a commitment to you and to me right here, right now, that Plant for the Planet and the work we do with these young people will continue on. I am not going to let it go. This is too important. Mm-hmm. And so, that's the commitment I made to him and to myself. Then, since then, we've had our ups and downs through the years. I've stuck with the group. Michael had to step down, chose to step down because some different things that occurred in his life. You may have known of him. He was a valve turner in the, was actually on Tuesday, October 11, 2016. I'm going to take a little segue here on this line to tell you what happened here. We were in the middle of doing academies. 2016 is happening, and it was a Saturday, and Saturday he came up to me and then maybe one other member of our group, or one of the adults. When leaving that Saturday night meeting in our Wallingford facility, and he said, "Watch the news Tuesday morning." I said, "What are you talking about, Mike?" He says, "Watch the news Tuesday morning. I'm going to be involved in something." I said, "What is it?" He says, "I can tell you no more. I can only tell you to watch the news." So Michael had been planning for months with Emily and with Ken Ward and with the others, the total group of five valve turners, to do the actions that they were ready to do on that day in October of 16, that next Tuesday. But none of us in the group he was with young people were affiliated with this. This is another part of his life. So when he went out and did the valve turning, it was a very controversial thing that he did, stopping with his friends for over an hour, I think, or more, the 100% of the flow of oil from Canada into the United States. 100% of the oil stopped from going from Canada in the United States for approximately an hour. I mean, incredible if you think about it. Yeah. And quite controversial. They actually turned valves and shut it all off, and there was big oh, how could you do this? And you're stopping the energy crisis. You're, all sorts of implications could happen. And they had all sorts of things that occurred. During that time, he actually, over the next few years, he had to do different things. One thing is he started to take a further of a back seat within our group, and he finally stepped down. He's no longer on the board now. Because there is some backlash from the adults in the room, who are saying this is not appropriate for a leader of a youth organization to do something as illegal as this. No matter how much moral high ground you think you are standing on, this is totally illegal. So he took a backseat for a period of time, and now he's totally off the board. He comes in as a consultant or helps youth whenever he can. And how did I get to where I was? I went ahead and followed my commitment. I stepped in and continued taking care of the records, and as a board member, have been a secretary all along. And then once it became apparent that I was getting more interest and activity being with young people out in nature, I said, let me back up a little bit. I said about 2013, after two or three of these academies that had occurred, and the parents are sitting around in a group meeting, now what, twiddling their thumbs, Michael said, I don't know, what shall we do? How do we keep this going? I raised my hand and I said, I'll run a monthly meeting if you'd like. Sure. So that's how I stepped into it. I had been a Boy Scout master in my previous life, and so I have a lot of Boy Scout training, and monthly troop meetings were quite common to me. So I have a lot of the modeling from that experience in my life. But the opportunity once a month to meet with our young people and help them stay engaged with promoting climate recovery was something that made sense to me and to everybody else. So that's how I first got involved with the monthly meetings. And they continued on, the group continued to grow. And then I merge more into enjoying the monthly outdoor activities we were doing. We're going cross-country skiing, we're going snow tubing, we're taking low tide beach hikes, we're taking hikes up into the mountains, we're doing other out in nature activities, in addition to going to the rallies and all the political and truly climate action oriented activities. I became more of the person that, even though I really enjoyed those other activities too, I wanted to get and help these young people get exposed to the outdoors on a regular basis. The reason I wanted to do that is I felt like if our young people can get as much time as possible with each other out in nature, they will develop within them a real internal strength when the going gets tough, when they inevitably in their future path as a climate activist are going to be slapped down, when they as an individual human on Mother Earth are going to get thrown up in the air upside down because of the forest fires or the floods or the storms. They will need strength. And I have the belief that when they have this strong connection and love for Mother Earth, it will can help them to continue on in the face of adversity. So that's how I merged into that outdoor position. And then the third position, and the one that I'm serving in right now, the monthly Zoom thing, I just felt so sad that we couldn't meet face to face. And I said to our board, I would be willing to go back into doing a monthly thing with them, but do it virtually. In fact, we did it weekly for a while. And so now I'm making sure this happens every month on a virtual basis. And we have now, over that last year that we've done this, maintained and even picked up a few, such as yourself, young people into our group. And that's what we wanted to do, at least maintain. If we can't grow a lot, at least maintain the youth in the group so they can stay connected with each other and share in the support for each other.
Yeah.
Long answer.
Yeah, well, I know that I'm new to the group, but in the few meetings that I've been to, I really looked forward to it. I know that Zoom meetings can, for me, definitely be hard after I'm on school for hours and on my computer and stuff. So, but I really do enjoy those monthly meetings. So they're really nice.
Well, thank you. We have been conscious about limiting the 1 hour at most, just because of that incredible Zoom fatigue that our young people have to put up with when they're in schooling in the COVID era.
Yeah. Well, what does climate justice and environmental justice mean to you and climate action families?
Well, I have to say that right now, here on the 18th of February, 2021, it means a lot more to me than it did a year ago. And I hope it will become even more so as my life unfolds. What happened in May of 2020 with the terrible killing of George Floyd and the awakening of so many of us to the intersectionality of climate justice and racial justice was incredible. So we are on a path. I personally am on a personal mission to further educate my body, educate my mind and my whole self on what is our deeper understanding of the connectedness with all of these missions, with all of these causes, all of the issues regarding how climate justice and racial justice are related. As an example, those people around the world, particularly the Global South, but right in our midst here in the greater Seattle area, that are marginalized, are Black, are Native American, are lesbian, are so many other marginalized people, often will be populated demographically in areas that are sacrifice zones or other ways downstream of polluting plants, such as coal plants, such as refineries. And because of that, you have to realize, I have to realize that once we identify that and start moving in the direction of more justice, more climate justice, more racial justice, more justice for all marginalized people, that climate justice will come along and it'll go hand in hand. So it's something that even though we've had, I can proudly say we have over 500 climate justice ambassadors trained, that's the name we've given to them. We have a 3-point plan, and the 3-point plan and plan for the planet is plant a bunch of trees. Second point, fight poverty through, point one is plant a bunch of trees, plant a trillion trees. Point two is keep fossil fuels in the ground. And point three is fight poverty through climate justice. We traditionally over these 8 years have focused more on the first two, nothing wrong with them, but we have not emphasized until 2020 rolled around, the third point, fight poverty through climate justice and understanding what climate justice means and how it's so interrelated with racial justice. So it is something we're learning about. We're having a component within our monthly meetings that's about that. I personally am taking reading various books and taking workshops to help me learn more about it myself. The latest one I'm taking right now is called Unpacking Whiteness. And it is an incredibly powerful set of trainings by some really good specialists on what the Black experience has been like and what the Indian experience has been like these last few hundred years here and here in our country. And when we go to school, as you have learned when you've gone to school and so many of us, we hit on, well, you probably get more of it than we got when we were in school 50 years ago, the highlights of Native American history, the highlights of Black history. And so often they are, how shall I say, sterilized. They're not accurate. We're not taught so much of the atrocities that manifest destiny and white man has brought to bear on our marginalized brothers and sisters.
Yeah. I was just listening to a podcast today about this man. I apologize, I forget his name. The podcast was called Resistance. And they were talking about this man who was like, all of these museums in Paris and across the world have stolen artifacts from Africa and in Asia and so many other countries. And he said that this is not right. And so he did something about it. And it's these museums still have so many stolen artifacts that belong in other countries. But that's just, I think, one example of something that we don't really get taught outright, but that is about racism. And so we have a lot of work to do.
Well, it's great to hear that you are you know, accepting and starting to learn from those that are speaking up about the injustices around the world, such as what you speak of, where artifacts are used or are either destroyed or stolen and get mm-hmm. taken from people that they belong to. Yeah,
yeah,
very important.
I think as a white person, it's I have to, because what's happening is not right, and I have to do something about it.
Yes, we are white, and as such, we have white privilege. And as a white man myself, I've even got the patriarchal white patriotism and patriarchy that gives me even more privilege. And with that, we can choose to do with it as we want to. But one thing is we can become an ally to marginalized peoples around the world. And so for you to learn as you are about some of the atrocities that have happened and that are currently happening, and finding ways to take a step toward them in this incredible opportunity to do podcast as you're doing, my hat's off to you. We thought about off and on with Climate Action Families, and we've even taken a stab at it, some of the adults, but nobody mm-hmm. has picked it up and run with it as you have. And so we're just thrilled to have you with us.
Thank you. Yeah. On a bit of a different note, what are some of your accomplishments, Rusty?
Well, I'm 70 years old, so, you know, how much time do we have? You know, when I read that question, or I hear you tell it to me, what are some of your accomplishments? I'm going to kind of, unless you want me to, I'm going to kind of stick to what I feel are the major accomplishments with Climate Action Families, our organization.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sounds good. So, we planted a lot of trees. I haven't kept track of them, but we planted trees, hundreds of trees, if not thousands of trees, either directly by a virtue of our academies getting paired. Every one of these 20 academies in the last 8 years gets paired either on this day or someday thereafter with a tree planting, because it's so vitally important. Our young people get their hands dirty, get into the soil, and actually help place a young sapling into the ground and tamp that soil down and do everything that's needed to bring about a new tree into the world. So we've done those, but we also have had fundraisers and other ways that we've sponsored opportunities to donate money to causes whereby a dollar or two of donation will go toward planting a tree. And there's other ways as well. So that's one thing, planting many trees. As I said earlier, we've got about 500 or over 500 climate justice ambassadors who've been trained. And these have been trained, as I said earlier, by older ambassadors. The first one, obviously, the first one that Michael did was just he and a few adults that trained the youth. But then after that, Gabe Mandel, you don't know Gabe, but he was one of our first ones, and Aji and so many others, they turned around and stepped up to the plate. We helped with the training, of course, as adults, but they then stepped in and they trained the other youth. So empowering for them to do that. Then early on, probably about 2014, we got involved with an organization called Our Children's Trust. Have you heard of Our Children's Trust?
Yes, I have.
Okay. That organization got founded by a group of attorneys that chose back, probably in the 2000s, we got rolled into it in about 2014, on a federal level and on a statewide level, to say to the governments of the country, we need to have young people future represented in the way we behave ourselves as a nation. We need to change the laws to reflect what the actual founders wanted us to have, which is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that includes having a safe and appropriate climate for our future. So, mm-hmm. when Michael heard from Andrea and Julia and the other attorneys that they were looking for youth, he says, well, let me tell you what we've got. And so the first group in the state of Washington of the Our Children's Trust plaintiffs in the ongoing lawsuit with the state of Washington were 100% from our organization. Now they're about 80%. We've grabbed a few others around the state. But those young people have stood up truth to power very much in the way they've been involved with these court cases in the state level. And we have some state representatives in Oregon and in a satellite mm-hmm. group. And then we have Aji Piper, who is also on the federal case. Okay, I'm going through my list here. I'm just reading off my list because I could talk on and on. If I didn't have this, I'll just I'll get sidetracked. Saving My Tomorrow was a six-part HBO series from 2014 through 2017 that featured a half a dozen groups around the country, but Plant for the Planet was one of them. So that was a wonderful opportunity for our young people to get a chance to get their voices shared. Young people like Athena and her friends got a chance, who are very articulate, to speak up to why our youth are so important in saving their tomorrow. Okay, then we had another highlight, which was when our Children's Trust Group finally had a chance to meet with Governor Inslee. So we had our president at that time, and Athena, and six of the plaintiffs on the court case, with Andrea, the attorney, and myself and Michael, and we sat down with the governor. It was supposed to be a 20-minute session. We were finally able to get 20 minutes on a Friday afternoon. Well, after 20 minutes just got done, and little Wren Wagenbach had spoken to him, as well as the other youth, passionately about what we need to do in our state to make things right. Well, he started listening more and more, and his assistant came in and said, "Sir, you're going to miss your ferry." He lives out on an island. "You're going to miss your ferry." He says, "Wave him up. That's okay. I can catch you later when it's okay." Okay, so another 20, 30 minutes goes on, and again, she comes out, "You're missing your next ferry. Don't worry, don't worry." So he was with us a whole hour, and it was wonderful to hear Governor Inslee get his earful of listening to young people. Now, since then, our young people have been quite critical of what he's done. And that's, to me, quite accurate in many regards. But on the other hand, had we not spoken to him with such passion, we being mostly the young people at that time, who knows, he may not have nearly as much environmental enthusiasm today, and would have been even worse. So we're thankful that happened. After that, we have an opportunity to join the forces of 350 Seattle and so many other groups to keep shell oil out of the Arctic. In 2015, mm-hmm. we were kayaktivists out there with the young people that could be on kayaks.
I love that. Kayaktivist. That's
yes, we were involved with that. I loaned my wetsuit to Aji, and he was out there paddling and being a kayaktivist. And we were on the land as well. We were leaving rallies, giving speeches, and mobilizing many people toward that big success, which was to have Shell Oil finally say, "Well, I think we're going to pull out of the Arctic. We're not going to go there anymore." And they say, "Oh, economic reasons." We know that's true, but we also know that they were responding to an overwhelming popular support to stop the incredible expansion and extraction of fossil fuel out of the delicate Arctic. Next thing I can speak of is 2016 through 18, we worked with an outfit called Stand.Earth in a Starbucks Better Cup campaign. Everybody knows Starbucks, right? But you probably don't know how much they actually have changed in the direction of getting a better cup. I'm not talking about the ones that they would encourage you to buy to refill, but I'm talking about the one that you pick up when you order it. It used to be terribly non-recyclable, but now, because of our action with these other groups, having the Starbucks CEO in Seattle finally listen to us in our group and move this multi-billion-dollar company towards a recyclable and compostable cup is a feather in our cap that we're real proud of.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We joined Stand.Earth. We're not only the ones that did it, but we were very thankful to join them in collaboration. Then in 2017, Jamie Margolin knocked at our door and said, "Hey, I'd like to join your group." And this was actually 2016. Yeah, because what happened was the terrible result of the election, and Jamie had been a staunch Hillary supporter. And when Hillary lost, well, she didn't lose the popular vote, as you remember, she only lost the Electoral College. When she lost the Electoral College, Jamie was, fraught and distraught for a number of days, a number of weeks. And then she found Climate Action Family. She's a Seattle resident, and she found our group. And so she got quite involved with us in 2017. And then nearing the middle of 17, she says, Rusty, and to all of us, I need to do something about this. I'm going to take it to another level. And she said, I'm going to start a movement. It didn't get the 0 hour name until early 18, but she knew she wanted to start a movement. And a movement was going to have a fantastic rally in Washington, D.C., which she had in July of 18. And we had the sister march, the 0 hour Seattle sister march that Climate Action Families ran here in Seattle. And we had probably 400 or 500 attendees that day, half and half youth and adults. Great event and great founding of a wonderful movement called 0 hour. Beyond that, in 2019, we had a critical role in this new ordinance where we have a fossil free King County and the Seattle Green New Deal. Those have come up thanks to a certain degree on the youth here in our group that were in a way the tip of the spear when so many other great organizations like 350 Seattle and so many others really put the energy into meeting and greeting and pulling together these organizations. They give us a call. Hey, can your youth help out? We're trying to have this rally. Absolutely. And we got our youth down there. And then when it's time to speak, who goes first and who gets the most? Well, if it's a sensible group like 350 Seattle or Sunrise or so many others, the youngest go first, or those that are interested in speaking. And that has been really powerful to have a feeling that we were able to help the fossil-free King County and Seattle Green New Deal move forward. And then in 2019, when Greta hits the scene worldwide, and then Greta started, you know, our wonderful Greta Thunberg, the wonderful Fridays for Future program. We had one of our members, Ian, that I think you've interviewed, or you've interviewed his mom, at least, Heather.
Yes.
Ian said, you know, why don't we have this here in the Seattle area? Or do we, Mom? Do we have any strikes going on? She said, nope. So that was early 19. No, it was late 2018 that he said this to a mom. And so by approximately January of 2019, Ian's doing these strikes, these Fridays for Future strikes in our Seattle City Hall. And throughout that year and throughout 19, these strikes kept growing and growing and growing. And then finally on Monday, September 9th, 2019, I don't know where you were at this time in your life. Do you remember that day? Do you remember the global climate strike in Seattle?
I think that I might've gone to that.
You probably wouldn't have missed it. It was, like I say, Monday, September 9th, 2019. Well, you might not know, but that global climate strike, the Seattle-based organization was led by Carolyn Hege and Zoe Sherman, two youth leaders in our Climate Action Youth Group. They led this strike in Seattle that blossomed into over 10,000 people in attendance. It was well beyond their wildest dreams or any of ours at this point. And they started in the I'm trying to think of the field in Seattle that they started, and they marched to Amazon. They picked up a lot of Amazon associates and then they marched to the City Hall. Wonderful day for these young people to, again, piggyback on top of this global thing and pull together this incredible thing with the global climate strike in September of 19. And then the last thing I'm going to mention to you is the connectedness that our young people have been able to maintain this past year. We have seen so many other groups fizzle and just go to the wayside because they have allowed, or COVID has taken hold of them. It's been an extremely challenging time with our global pandemic. And our youth have met virtually every month to maintain their connectedness with each other, to continue to promote climate recovery, and especially to begin to gain a deeper understanding of the intersectionality of climate justice with Black Lives Matter and so many other marginalized peoples here living on planet Earth. So that's a summary, and I tried to make it pretty short, of what I consider is some of our major accomplishments these last 8 years for our modest little group, Climate Action
Plan. Yes, definitely. Well, on the same road of accomplishments and action, what advice would you give to people who want to start to do something about climate change, but are not sure where to start?
If you're anywhere from 8 to 16, or maybe even you're 5, 6, or 7 years old and 16, and you're interested in the greater Western Washington area, to join us. We would love to have you join us. Drop in a meeting, see what we're doing, give me a call, or I can send you to any members of our board or other youth to call them and chat with you about them, about us and what we're doing. We want young people, especially young people who are equally passionate about the climate crisis as their parents are, to know that here with Climate Action Families, you will find a voice, you will find like-minded kindred spirits, you will find people, young people finding their. I think though, if you don't have our group nearby or you're not of this particular age, that's okay. There's a lot of others out there, a lot of other climate groups that you can get affiliated with. I'm gonna mention one other thing before I go to the last item of what advice I have. And that other thing is relationships. Michael and I spoke about this at least two or three times, and we just have a deep understanding between ourselves about the word relationships, that the climate movement within our little community of Climate Action Families, as well as between our group and other groups, is really built on relationships. As we build and honor the relationships we have with one another, and with our American Indian brothers and sisters, and with all people that have a like-minded passion for promoting climate recovery, those relationships form a real strong bond as we inevitably will hit roadblocks in our path and inevitably get discouraged and inevitably get burned out. So what advice I have is build those relationships. And the last thing I'm going to say is the two things that Jamie so eloquently described in her book that you have, of course, Youth to Power, mm-hmm. one of which is to find your why, to look deep within you and ask yourself, why do I want to be a climate activist? What is it that motivates me? And name it. And you may have it like that. It may take a while. For me, it was, okay, Michael, kids, environment, the future of our climate, I'm there. So it was an aha moment for me. But many other people, it happens. And of course, it took me till the age of 65 to discover that. For many other people, it might be a different way. But if you find deep inside of you why you are so wanting to be involved with it, that will help you a great deal. And the other thing about advice is what Jamie said to you. Once you've discovered this and you're finding your path and you're getting going, do not forget to breathe. And what I mean is, do not forget to allow yourself time away from and separate from the climate crisis and solving the climate crisis because of the overwhelming nature of racial injustice, the overwhelming nature of climate injustice, and the dire situation the world finds ourselves in. Our hearts go out to those that are in Texas right now that are dying, that are dying today because of the incredible polar vortex that swung down to that state and has devastated them with such cold weather that they're not used to, and the electrical grid associated with it. So find a balance in your life, so you don't get so depressed and so down. The emotional health of yourself, along with your spiritual health, your mental health and physical health, are super important. So as Jamie would say, and she said in her book so well, if you have an outlet, if you have a hobby, if it's gymnastics, if it's reading, if it's walking, if it's what other healthy thing that builds you up, that's away from the climate crisis, you will have fresh eyes and a fresh perspective to take back with you. A simple way of saying, have a little bit of balance in your life. With passion that you want to solve the climate crisis, include also a balance in your life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Rusty, for coming on to How to Save the Planet. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you too. And for the work you're doing with this wonderful podcast, it's just a wonderful thing for you and your personal growth and as a role model for the rest of our young people and to the rest of us, and bringing us about into a way that really helps us understand the crisis more. Thank you very much, Eliza, and I will see you on the other side.
Thank you. Goodbye. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, everyone, for joining us today.
for another episode of How to Save the Planet. See you next time.